never imagined that I could be unfaithful. But you get beyond the point of no return and you let it happen.
Here was a guy who was meeting her needs emotionally.
Things seemed a little bit distant, and I wasn't sure why.
Secrets are extremely dangerous in a marriage.
I hadn't had a first kiss with a woman in a long time. It was pretty intense.
I never thought that Ace would cheat on me.
It was just such an adrenaline rush that I didn't want to come down off of that high.
I knew I shouldn't be there, and I let it happen anyway. Mike and I were in the hot tub alone. I really didn't think much about being married. It started with the holding of a hand, and it's just that closeness and that intimacy and the fog from the hot tub. All of a sudden, we're kissing. Then we decided to go up to his room. I knew what was gonna happen. There was an inner struggle, but more of me wanted what was going on as opposed to the part of me that knew it shouldn't happen. I never imagined that I could be unfaithful.
I was 19 when I met Debbie, and she was a few years younger. She was 16 at the time.
I was invited to an all-city dance with a friend of mine. I pulled into my parking spot, and Jason's truck was parked across from me.
Throughout the evening, we would steal glances at each other.
I knew I wanted to see him again, so I left my phone number on a piece of paper on the windshield of his truck, and he called me the next day.
From the very beginning, it was almost like an electric touch when I'd hold her hand or when we'd kiss.
Jason and I fell in love pretty quickly.
As the relationship was growing deeper and deeper, I really began to visualize myself marrying her and living with her forever.
He was everything that I knew I wanted, and I knew right away that he was the one.
I proposed to Debbie in May of 1988. It was approximately a month before she graduated from high school.
I loved Jason because he made me feel special. I felt secure, and he was a hard worker. He was definitely a provider.
During that year of our engagement, I had started working full-time, and I was working for a retail company, and retail hours are unpredictable.
I was a legal secretary, so when I was off in the evenings and weekends, he was typically working. We didn't spend a lot of time together. I'm not an alone person, so I started going out. The summer before I got married, I met a friend, her name's Samantha, and we started going to parties. It became an every weekend thing. I guess it was that I thought I could have it all.
I didn't like Samantha. I couldn't really tell Debbie why. There was just something about her that I didn't trust.
Jason definitely didn't like the fact that I was starting to go out. But I think at that time, he was wanting me to figure out what I wanted for myself. I didn't feel doubt about marrying Jason. That is what I wanted for myself long term, but I also was having a lot of fun. I felt like it was a fairy tale. I had all these expectations and dreams of what being married would look like, and that was the day when all of my dreams were beginning. The wedding was perfect. The honeymoon was amazing.
I was really looking forward to building a life with Debbie and seeing what we could accomplish together.
I thought, in my perfect little world, that he would have a lot of time for me. We would be spending a lot of time together. And I realized fairly quickly that that was not going to be the case.
And it was expected that I would put in extra time, sometimes working on my own time, if I wanted to get ahead and if I wanted to earn that next promotion. So I was pretty committed to my job.
It was probably within a week or two of getting home from our honeymoon when I realized that this isn't going how I imagined it would go. I was feeling very angry towards Jason because of all of the hours he was working.
She never communicated to me that she missed me being there. She never told me that she was feeling lonely.
Although we were having sex, it wasn't that often. I didn't feel connected to Jason very much at all.
When I met Jason and Debbie, neither of them had an effective way to communicate with one another. And so because of that, the odds were pretty stacked against them.
It was extremely difficult for me coming to the realization that, you know, this is going to be my life. That's when I called Samantha and said, okay, what's going on tonight? Where's the party? Let's go. The parties that we used to go to were at a guy named Mike's house. The first party at Mike's house, there was a lot of people there. There was lots of alcohol. I knew that Mike was attracted to me because of the extra attention that he paid towards me. The flirting never stopped. Mike didn't care if I was married or not married, and I didn't think about Jason or being a wife. It was almost like I wanted to escape that.
I think I had an expectation that when I got home, especially if it was late at night, she better be there. And I remember feeling a little bit left out, but I think we avoided talking about it a lot, and I just kind of stuffed my feelings.
I actually went looking for it, and I knew that if I continued to go to the parties, that something eventually would happen. After we got married, my needs weren't being met with Jason at home as far as attention and time and even physical needs. So I started to think that possibly the needs could be fulfilled with Mike outside of my marriage with Jason. Everyone was drinking and hot tubbing. I had a bikini. Sometimes I wore it, sometimes I didn't. Obviously, everybody naked in the hot tub is attractive, you know, a situation that I never should have been in. It got later in the evening, and at the end, Mike and I were in the hot tub alone. There was a big attraction, the touch, the butterflies, and then it progressed to the kiss. It was something that was inevitable. We went up to his room. It was kind of like a drug. At one point, you know, you get beyond the point of no return and you let it happen. It wasn't romantic. There was no emotional connection. It wasn't anything that I thought it would be. It was just sex. Right after I got up, got dressed, and left, I couldn't believe what I had just done, and I couldn't get out of there fast enough. As I was driving home, on one hand, I'm horrified at myself for letting it happen, but on the other hand, I'm thinking, okay, I had all this attention, and, you know, I was interested in being with Mike.
Debbie went to Mike because of a misinformed belief of what a true emotional connection with somebody was about. She did have Jason waiting at home for her. She did have the ability to have a potentially good connection with Jason. But it wasn't this fairy tale that she thought it was gonna be.
When I got home, Jason was already asleep. And I just changed my clothes and got into bed. I felt so much guilt that I almost couldn't take it. I couldn't sleep, tossing and turning, tons of anxiety. I felt like I was gonna throw up.
Things seemed a little bit distant, and I wasn't quite sure why. I noticed that we were not talking as much as we had before. She was not sharing details of her day. And I think I kind of used that to get out of the house a little bit. I just wanted an escape, and I thought work was a good way to do that.
I think the role that Jason played in Debbie's infidelity was one in which, while he was a financial protector and while he worked hard to provide for her, he was an emotional protector. And I think that's based on how he was raised. He was raised to work. He wasn't raised to relate.
I had rationalized in my head that Jason wasn't interested anymore. So I would see Mike on the weekends. I was pretty confident that Jason wouldn't find out. He was busy at work. He didn't ask questions. It was like two ships passing in the night. Mike filled a void.
Some of the things that I expected of Debbie was, first of all, that I would know where she's at and what she's doing and who she's with. And sometimes she wouldn't communicate those things with me, but it just never crossed my mind that she would stray.
When Debbie was right in the middle of the affair, while she had the guilt and remorse, she also had this new connection, this way that she was getting fed emotionally. And those two were in great conflict. And I think ultimately one was winning out over the other.
I had been seeing Mike 5 or 6 weeks, maybe 7. And I finally got to the point where I knew it couldn't continue. The two different lives that I was living was a constant struggle. On one hand, I wanted to be married to Jason. But on the other hand, we got married so young, and I didn't really feel like I was able to live my life before I got married.
As Debbie's guilt and remorse came into play, I think she slowly started recognizing this is not right what I'm doing, and it's going to lead to a divorce.
I decided in my head that it was done. I wrote Mike a letter. In short, I just wanted him to know that it was over. I could only go on for so long fooling Jason. I thought that I could end it and that Jason would never have to know. After I wrote the letter, I had put it in my backpack. I'd planned on giving it to him the next day, but I needed something out of my backpack at home. So I dug through and didn't realize that I'd left the letter out.
It was early in the morning. I was up getting ready for work. I remember finding the letter. It was on the kitchen table, and she was still asleep. The letter said,
"Dear Mike, I can't do this anymore. Living two lives and lying to Jason, the guilt is too much, and this isn't who I am. I want to make my marriage work."
It was as if somebody had punched me in the gut. It was a feeling that is almost indescribable, almost as if the wind was sucked out of my lungs. It had never crossed my mind that Debbie might be cheating. I started crying, and all these thoughts and emotions were going through my mind, and really wasn't sure what I was gonna say. I remember she woke up and looked at me, and as I remember the look on her face, the look of disappointment. It still hurts.
I just looked, and there was Jason standing in the doorway, and I could tell that he was crying. My first thought was, he must know, but how did he find out? I obviously was feeling guilt and felt like I needed to ask for forgiveness from him, but I didn't want to assume all the responsibility. I was blaming him for being gone all the time. What was I supposed to do?
I rejected that right out because I knew that I had my faults and I wasn't the perfect husband I could have been, but I knew that it wasn't anything that I had done wrong.
Jason was extremely upset. He really didn't want to talk. He didn't want to hear anything I had to say.
I realized that the best thing I could do is ask her to move out. But I told her she had to leave her wedding ring behind. I mean, I felt that my life, as I knew it, was ending. I think when I asked her to take off her wedding ring, I was scared that she actually would. And when she did and she handed it to me, wow, this fairy tale doesn't have a and they lived happily ever after again ending.
For Jason to ask for my wedding ring felt very final to me, like I had made the ultimate mistake.
When I watched her walk out the door, I felt sadness. I felt anger again. I felt betrayed.
I went to Mike's house. I didn't know where else to go. When I got there, he didn't seem terribly happy to see me. It was really awkward. We didn't talk. And I remember just sitting there crying. I should not have gone there. Jason was on his way to the hospital. His lung had collapsed. He couldn't breathe, and his other lung was almost collapsed. And he had to go into surgery right away.
All of a sudden, I'm thinking, wow, okay, so I'm on my deathbed if they don't fix me, and Debbie is gonna be a widow.
The entire rest of my life kind of went through my mind, and I for sure wanted him in it. This was a huge wake-up call for me. The affair was the worst thing I could have done. I didn't know if Jason would accept me to come back. I rushed to the hospital. I was scared that he wouldn't make it through and I wouldn't have a chance to show him how much I loved him.
In traumatic experiences, we are able to see what matters. When Jason was sent to the hospital, it took that incident to sharply bring in a future focus in her mind.
When I first saw Jason after the surgery, I apologized and told him I couldn't believe I hurt him that bad and understood the pain that I had caused, and if he took me back, that I would spend,
sorry,
that I would love him and that he was the most important thing to me, and I would spend the rest of my life convincing him of that.
We had not dealt with all the issues that were facing us with the infidelity and everything that entailed, but I wanted this marriage to work. Coming home from the hospital with Debbie marked a new beginning in my mind. Debbie had suggested that we see a counselor. We were really hopeful that he would be able to help us.
one of the first steps to rebuilding trust in a marriage affected by infidelity is clear, concise communication about where you're going to be, who you're going to be with.
As she was rebuilding trust, she would call me when she got home from work. I knew how far it was to work, and on occasion I checked the odometer.
The way you build up trust is whatever works for you in that moment. I think checking the odometer, that was what Jason needed at the moment to get trust back, and it was reasonable.
Counseling taught me that the reason for the infidelity was because my needs weren't being met, but I didn't know how to communicate what those needs were.
We learned how to talk, how to listen. We learned how to fight.
There's no doubt in my mind that we made it. We have 4 amazing kids, and we are enjoying life to its fullest.
They say you can forgive and forget, but you don't forget. You can forgive, but you don't forget.
I think the most difficult part about the infidelity was forgiving myself.
I had decided that this marriage was worth it, so I forgave Debbie for being unfaithful.
And that's just a huge thing. But Jason forgave me long before I forgave myself.
Our commitment to one another taught us that not only could we survive that, but we could survive anything. She's the most important person to me, and I make her feel that way. That helps us keep our love strong.
We've been through the fire, we've come out the other side, and he and I are very much still in love, way more than we were when we got married. It can be done.
It was just the two of us at the radio station alone. I just grabbed her and kissed her. And it was just all of that raw magnetism that just happens when the sexual tension is present. No one ever gets married and thinks that they're going to cross that line. And I definitely didn't think it was going to be me.
Ace and I met in college. I was 20, he was 21.
We were at a college party, and she called me across the room. I was so drawn in by her eyes, they melted me.
We talked all night long, had our first date that very next day, and after that first date, we were pretty much inseparable.
She had so much passion that I just felt like this is a girl that I want to spend the rest of my life with.
My wedding today was spectacular. We danced and laughed. I can't remember being more in love.
When she walked down the aisle, I was blown away. I'd found my true love.
I was very excited about starting our future together.
My first full-time job was working for a radio station. And I thought I was on top of the world.
After I got married, I was a preschool teacher. We knew we wanted kids, so about 3.5 years into it, we decided that we would try.
Our first daughter was born on January 9th, 2001. We named her Lennon. I remember going down to the nursery and standing there for hours. I thought, that is my baby girl.
I had always wanted to have a daughter. That was my dream. I began to realize I was sad and crying and feeling overwhelmed. I'm just laying there wanting to take care of my baby, and I really couldn't.
When I first met Bethany, she was suffering from postpartum depression, where the hormonal changes interfere with the mother and the child's ability to bond. And then those symptoms of isolation and withdrawal start to become more prominent.
I was excited because we were going to have another baby. But I was also a little nervous because my depression was at its darkest.
I remember just being elated that the baby was coming. Our second daughter was born September 20th of 2003. We named her McCartney. She was 4 weeks early, and the cord was wrapped around her neck.
Within an hour and a half, they had taken her away from us. Her lungs were not expanding.
It was incredibly stressful watching her chest cave in and out while she's struggling for air because her lungs never fully developed.
When McCartney finally got to go home, she was 9 days old, and it was scary to take home this little bitty baby. They gave us a nebulizer to help her to breathe, and we would have to give it to her 4 or 5 times a day. So my whole world revolved around whether or not McCartney could breathe well. I didn't get to spend the time with Lennon that I needed to spend with her, and there certainly wasn't time with Ace. It was very taxing on me. I felt extremely alone. I was completely drained from taking care of McCartney, trying to keep up with Lennon. I was very distant from Ace. There wasn't an emotional connection.
When a couple has a child who has health issues, it can lead to where they pull apart. It appeared in this case for Ace and Bethany that their relationship then really becomes a low priority, if no priority.
When the depression was at its height, our intimacy was completely gone. I started thinking, if my wife is not going to love me and be passionate about me, I'm going to gravitate to someone who will. Passion at home was completely gone with Bethany. There was nothing there between us. I wanted and desperately needed someone to be passionate about me again. After we had Lennon and McCartney, I went from a normal 8-hour day to working 12 to 15 hours a day. Christy was hired to come in and be my co-host. Christy was a single mom. As she and I got to know each other, we realized that we had a lot of things in common. So it was very easy for us to gravitate into conversations about deeper things than just the show.
Christy and I became friends. We would go shopping. We would dye each other's hair. She was having trouble finding childcare, and so I offered to watch her daughter for her.
Christy was over at the house every day, dropping off and picking up her daughter, which meant that the three of us were hanging out a lot. The more we got to know each other, the more of a connection we had emotionally, the more our conversation started to turn into a flirtation. I really started to find myself attracted to her. For 4 hours every morning, it was just the two of us. It seemed like there was just this huge sexual tension in the room at all times. I had pulled a muscle in my neck, and Christy offered up that she would, you know, rub my shoulder to make it feel better. But the more that she started to rub my shoulder, that attraction that I already had for her really kind of rose to the surface very quickly. I just turned around and kissed her, and she kissed me back. I wasn't thinking about being a husband or being a dad at that time. I hadn't had a first kiss with a woman in a long time. It was just an amazing feeling to me. I eventually just kind of pushed out of my mind of where I was and what I was about to do, and we had sex.
Workplace affairs often begin simply because of the amount of time people spend together. They start to make a connection emotionally, and then boundaries get crossed, and people don't realize what's already started to happen.
I was disappointed that I'd allowed myself to be in a situation that I would let that happen. I would let my guard down because I still loved Bethany. I remember feeling guilty driving home. I tried to go in and act as if nothing was wrong. Laying next to Bethany after that first time was very awkward for me because there was part of me that was still turned on by the thoughts of Christy. But I desperately wanted to be good. I wanted to do the right thing. But it's just such an adrenaline rush that I didn't want to come down off of that high. I would get up early, go to work, and we'd have sex before the show. And it was pretty intense. Because it was so early in the morning, the fear of getting caught was never anything that crossed either of our minds because we knew we were still a good couple hours away before the first body walked through the building. When we weren't at the station together or she wasn't at the house with us, Christy and I would text constantly. It was almost like, you know, the radio personality was the one having the affair, but Ace at home, that was a different person.
He began to pull away from me, and I started to see a different man. He wasn't talking to me. His hours began to get longer, and even when he was home, he wasn't really there.
I eventually just cut Bethany out of my mind because Christy was so into me. I felt like I was 15.
Ace was able to compartmentalize his emotions and set that aside from what was happening. Putting everything at risk was not at a forefront in his mind.
Christy was over at our house every day. She was picking up her daughter and staying for dinner.
I remember it was incredibly awkward and weird, the three of us hanging out. If Bethany was cleaning up from dinner or something, you know, we might sneak a kiss. I wasn't looking to leave Bethany, but I was falling in love with Christy.
I began to notice some signs that they seemed rather close. When she was leaving one day, they leaned in for a hug that just seemed to last a little too long. I didn't want to be the jealous wife, but I felt very suspicious. I took it upon myself to go through his emails, and that's when I found chat messages and emails that started to clue me in that there was something more than just co-host. I immediately knew. And I was devastated. Everything about what I thought to be true was completely yanked out from underneath me. I never thought that Ace would cheat on me. I was broken because I knew that there was no coming back from this. My husband had cheated, and I had nothing. I'd been a stay-home mom. The betrayal that I felt from Christy was almost just as hard as what I felt from Ace, because she was like a sister to me. I was furious with him for doing it, and furious at myself for not seeing it sooner. I confronted Ace about the emails, and he denied it. I tried to let him think that I believed him, just because I wanted him to dig his own grave.
I was very angry that she went into my email. She was on to me, but I didn't know what to do.
I wanted the affair to end. So I called and told his boss what was going on. I actually mailed him the emails. He was just shocked. He couldn't believe that Ace, the man that had done so much for this radio station, had had an affair.
He called me in to his office, and once I knew that my boss had the emails, the only thing to do was to resign. Christy and I lost our jobs the same day. That day, it was over. I didn't know where to go from there. I didn't know what to do. I just felt like when things got so bad that you couldn't fix it, you break up and you go find somebody else.
When Ace came home, he told me he wanted a divorce. Nobody ever expects to hear that from their husband. The whole thought of being a divorced woman scared me to death. I felt completely trapped. He had absolutely taken everything away from me, my security, my family, my love. The next day, he scheduled the appointment with the lawyer. I cried the entire time. And I didn't really know how I was going to deal with losing my whole family.
The paperwork was being drawn up for the divorce, and Beth and I were still living in the same house, but those were the moments of clarity that I started to see this house is empty without my family, and that my girls weren't going to be around to see me every day, and I wasn't going to get to hug and kiss them and tuck them in at night. I remember sitting in the hallway, crying, and Lennon goes, "Daddy, why don't you love Mommy anymore?" And I didn't have an answer. I just held on to her and I said, "Baby, Daddy's trying to be a better man." My affair had become this bomb that just dropped in my life, and I allowed it to explode. And I realized that I had not just shredded Bethany, but now it was affecting my daughters. I remember feeling that I needed to do whatever it took to keep my family together, but I didn't know even how to begin to be a good husband anymore, and didn't know if Bethany could ever trust me, and I didn't know if I could ever trust myself.
Most marriages can be saved if all the lies and all the secrets are brought out and the marriage is given the time it needs to heal and the partners can rebuild trust.
I remember telling Bethany, "I'll go to counseling, I'll do whatever you need me to do. I love you, I want to make this work."
When Ace told me he wanted to work it out, I didn't believe him. I was still blindsided. I didn't think I would be able to save my family. Even though I was angry, I didn't want my marriage to be over with. I still loved my husband. I hated what he had done to us, but I wanted to be married to him.
It's very difficult to know exactly when to keep working on the marriage and when to stop fixing it. They really have to face the infidelity to move forward.
Yes, I failed. I made a bad choice. If nothing else, I should have some dignity and respect as a man. And I never did that. I was busy trying to hide all of my selfish wants and desires. Therapy was good for me in that it made me realize communication is incredibly important. I need to tell Bethany what I want.
I've learned that it's part of my job is to make him feel important as my husband. But I also needed to take care of myself.
Bethany's depression manifested in the marriage with the isolation and pulling away. Since starting medication, Bethany has been better able to manage the depression and recognize symptoms of knowing when she's starting to isolate.
Rebuilding trust with Bethany was difficult, but became easier as we just started to replace bad habits with good habits. You know, doing things like when I get home every day, I walk straight to Bethany, give her a big hug and a kiss, and tell her I miss her and I loved her.
I trust Ace again. There's moments where there's always going to be some kind of lingering doubt. But Ace and I opened up in every way. He lets me see his email and text.
The biggest thing with earning back trust is time. Time without lies, time without secrets, and open communication.
I have forgiven Ace. If I had held on to the hurt and the pain, then it would have made me a more angry, bitter person, and that's not good for him, it's not good for me, and it's not good for our children.
It's pretty overwhelming in thinking that she's been able to forgive me for all of the pain that I've caused her. It reminds me of just how an amazing woman she really is. Our marriage now is taking one day at a time. It's allowed us to have a greater relationship with the girls, and they see us back to being a loving couple. Hopefully can set them up to have a successful marriage as they get older.
Emotionally, we are right there. We know exactly what the other one's feeling. Physically, it's all there. It's like we've started a brand new, fresh relationship.
But I think it's a different kind of connection now. Bethany and I have kind of adopted the philosophy that marriage is one long conversation. I love her. I want great things for her. And whatever I can do to help her succeed in those things, I'm going to do them.
It is so refreshing to be able to get up every day and smile and be excited about our future together. The greatest lesson I've learned through all of this is that I have to have an identity for myself. I am not just mother. I'm not just wife. I am Bethany, and I matter. The most important thing for Ace to know is that I love him, and I love our family.